살았어야 돼요.
Major themes, of course, of Purim is the central role of wine. The presence, as we've learned, Mara says, "I finished with a sume." A person obligated to get drunk, ad lo yada, until he doesn't know the difference between Baruch Mordechai and Baruch Haman. Blessed is Mordechai, and cursed is Haman.
After what age, Rabbi?
I guess the
13
is the age. Now the Rambam says it just means that you drink more than usual and you fall asleep. Right. And the Rama records that.
Because when you're asleep, you don't know the difference.
Yes. Right. They say that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he didn't drink on Purim. They said to him, "Why don't you drink on Purim?" He said, "I don't know what's going to come out if I get drunk. I don't trust myself. I don't know if I'll behave." So there are those who don't drink so much, but the Gemara seems to say this is the day to drink, the only day of the year that we're supposed to drink to a real extreme level, not to know the difference between good and bad. That's like beyond anything. It's like no limits at such a level.
How does it work about yourself?
Myself? I try to drink. I used to not, but I do try to drink. That's so hard, you know, to drink a bit more than usual and to fall asleep. So I try to drink.
Okay.
So Rav Huttner has a very beautiful thought. So we know that there's in general an obligation of joy on Yom Tov. A success with Samachta B'chagecha. Be happy during your holiday. We're always supposed to be happy. So what is it about Purim? And we know that simcha is wine. The Gemara says, "Ain't simcha l'basar v'yayin." Joy is with wine, as the verse says, "V'yayin yisamach l'vavenosh." Wine makes a heart happy. So Purim is with wine, but every Yom Tov is with wine. So what's the difference between Purim and all the holidays? So the difference is, in all the other holidays, we always have limits. Let's say matzah on Pesach. You have to have a kazayas of matzah. Multiple olives, but there's a certain set amount. You know, we talk about drinking a cup of Kiddush, supposed to have a revius, a quarter of a cup, of a loaf, a certain amount, we're supposed to have, not more. But apparently on Purim, there's no limits. You just drink, and you drink, and you drink. So, why is that so? Now, the Rambam says generally that on Yom Tov, Beis Din used to appoint policemen who would go from town to town, go around on Yom Tov, the people not drink too much. But that's clearly not what's going on Purim. So on Purim, there's no limits to the drinking. So what's going on here? Why do we suddenly have a holiday of drinking with no limits? So Rav Huttner suggests the following answer. He said there are two types of illnesses that precipitate joyous celebration. Someone ever has an illness, maybe a heart issue, or some other difficult illness, a stomach issue, an eye issue. And thank God it's healed. He makes a party to celebrate that it's healed. So that's a big party, he's very happy. The happiness is not the healing. The healing is not the happiness. There was an illness. The healing of the illness is something so joyous and so wonderful, it deserves to be celebrated. So because I'm healed, I'm thankful, and my thankfulness gets expressed in a party, in celebration, suda sota, meal of thanks. Then there's a person whose illness was that he was depressed. Someone who's ill because he was depressed, the illness was that he wasn't able to be happy. So when he celebrates happiness after depression, so it's not just that, okay, he's out of the depression, so be happy. The happiness itself is what's taking him out of the depression. Being happy is the sign that I'm healed. It's not just that because I'm healed, I'm happy. The happiness itself is the display of the healing. This adds to the healing. There's such an excitement. Wow, I could be happy again. It was so long that I didn't feel anything happy, but now there's such happiness. So every time he feels happy, wow, that again reminds me that I'm out of this illness. So that's a new reason to be happy. So there's a happiness that keeps growing. I'm out of this depression. When I was depressed, nothing made me happy. I couldn't see anything positive. But now, I'm happy. I'm out of the depression. And that itself heals me, that I'm out of, I have this joy. So what does Rashi tell us about Amalek? Rashi says about Amalek, Asher karcha badarach. He came and he cooled you down along the way. He cooled you down along the way. It says Rashi, when you came out of Egypt, you were boiling hot. It's like this enemy that jumps into a boiling hot bathtub. So even though he gets burned, but he cooled it down. Amalek was the first to attack us. They cooled us down. So where does the passion of Jews come from? Simcha shel mitzvah, the joy of doing a mitzvah. Amalek cools our passion, that means Amalek is the source of depression. Amalek is what's reducing the joy. So when we celebrate getting out of depression, each moment of joy is reason for more joy. Ah, I'm out of the depression. The proof is that I'm happy. The happiness creates more happiness. So there can't be any limits. When it comes to the joy of Purim, it's a simcha, it's a joy without any limits. Joy, more joy, more joy. So we drink. There's no limits to how much we have to drink. We drink, and we drink, and we drink. Rav Wolfson had a chesed shetorah about the importance of wine on Purim. Based on the Gemara in Maseches Megillah. Maseches Megillah from Daf Yud till around Daf Tezayin. The Gemara goes through Megillah's Esther. All sorts of added color commentary to verses that we have in the Megillah. So it says there in the Megillah, in the Gemara, the verse says, Vayom HaShvi'i, the seventh day, Kitov Lev HaMelech Mayayim, when the heart of the king was good with the wine. So he called all of his advisors, invited Vashti to come, and as we know, Vashti refused to come, etc. And we know that the Megillah is always read on two levels. There's the simple reading of the Megillah, about Ahasuerus, the other reading, it's really about Hashem. Wherever it says HaMelech, the king is a reference to Hashem. So what is Kitov Lev HaMelech Bayayim? How could the Hashem be happy on the seventh day because of the wine? What does it mean Hashem is happy on the seventh day because of the wine? Hayom HaShini on the seventh day, Kitov Lev HaMelech Bayayim? The Gemara says yes. On Shabbos, Hashem is happy when Jews drink wine. Because when Jews drink wine on Shabbos, what comes out? They're happy, they say Divrei Torah, the thoughts of Hashem. Gives Hashem joy. But on the other hand, when the non-Jews drink wine, they get to talk about inappropriate topics. It's not so good. This is Kitov Lev HaMelech Bayayim. So Wolf says, okay, let's now plug it into the verse. The verse didn't say that in general God's happy on the seventh day. It says on this party, Bayom HaShvi, on the seventh day of the second party, Kitov Lev HaMelech, when was the heart of the king happy? Bayayim, because of the wine. So what was it about the wine of the seventh day of the party that made Hashem so happy? This wine? What about all the wine for the last 186 days? The wine of the seventh day, that's what makes Hashem happy. Okay, so that's question number one. Question number two, the verse says, V'yein malchus rav kiyad amalech. And there was a lot of wine, as much as the hand of the king. The king was very generous. A lot of wine, drink, whatever you want. So, what's the big deal that there was a lot of wine? I mean, the Megillah describes there was gold and silver, mitzvahs bahat vashesh, the floor was marble, the darva sochares, the ashkos b'chlei zahav, they're pouring with golden vessels. So of course, there's so many good things, there'll be wine too. Why does the Megillah make a point of saying, v'yein malchus rav kiyad amalech? The Gemara says, what does it mean, v'yein malchus rav? The term Rav means old. The wine of the king was old wine. Shenasa l'kol echad yayin shegadol hinene b'shanim. Achashverosh gave to each person at the party wine that was older than him. I'm 43 years old. The bottle of wine that I would have gotten at Achashverosh's party would have been at the very least 44, 45 years old. Everyone got wine that was older than a person's age. Tremendously old bottles of wine. A lot of wine, and old bottles of wine. So, how is that part of the miracle? Every part of the Megillah is part of the miracle. Achashverosh had to have this party so that Vashti would get killed, and there would be a vacuum, and Esther could take the place, and, you know, Esther therefore could save the Jews. Everything is part of the miracle. So how is this part of the miracle? The wine was older than each participant. Each participant had wine that was older than his age. And how's that part of the miracle? And then they have another point. The Megillah says, Vashtiya kadas, the drinking was as the rule, ain't ones. No one was forced. So the Gemara says, no one had to drink wine that he didn't like. So if a person was from America, he had wine from California. Someone was from Persia, he had wine from Persia. They had different wines. The people had the wine they were used to. Shenasa l'kol echad ve'echad yayin medinasa. Every person was given the wine of his country. So again, it's a question. What's the big deal with everybody getting the wine of their country? So why is it a big deal that the wine was old? Why is it a big deal that Achashverosh gave so much wine? Of course, why wouldn't he give a lot of wine? And why is Hashem happy with the wine of this day, of the seventh day? And the most surprising lesson that we have in the Megillah, in the Gemara, is the verse says that the king commanded, La'asos kirtzon ish va'ish, to do as the will of each and every person. That's the simple meaning. Whatever anybody wants, they got it. So somebody says, I want chicken, they got chicken. Someone else wanted steak, they got steak. Everybody got what they wanted. The Gemara says, Ish va'ish is a reference to the two people in Megillat Esther called Ish. Ish Yehudi hayav v'shushana biro shmo Mordechai, and Ish tzar v'oyev hamana raza. During the meal of Achashverosh, this party that goes on for 187 days, Achashverosh did whatever Mordechai wanted and whatever Haman wanted. That's beyond crazy. The Gemara tells us that the whole reason for why the Jews were deserving of such a fear and a fright is that we went to the party. And Mordechai encouraged us not to go to the party. And here the Gemara is saying that Mordechai was the Mashgiach Kashrus. He was the supervisor. He was the rabbinic guide giving his blessing to the party. They were doing everything, whatever Mordechai asked. As you say, Mordechai, that's what we do. It's not going to be that Mordechai is approving of this party. It doesn't make any sense. So Rav Wolfson said, with all these questions, some of them will answer each other. Again, the questions were, why does it say, Bayom HaShvi'i, on the seventh day, remember, there were two parties. First, it was a party for 6 months, 180 days, for all the representatives of 127 countries. And at the end of 180 days of drinking, he said another 7 days for everybody local, for all the people of Shushan. It says, "Bayom Hashvi'i on the seventh day, Ketov Lei Bayimelech Bayayin," and the king's heart was happy with the wine. Amar, he said, "Lehuman Bizasach Avonaz Bizar Hakasver." He tells his ministers, "You know, let's go bring out Vashti." Okay, so, and his heart is good with the wine, but we know that it's reference really to Hashem. So, why is Hashem suddenly happy with this wine, the wine of day 187? That's question number one. Question number two is, what's the big deal that he was very generous with the wine? He's very generous with gold, so of course he'll be generous with wine. Question number three, what's this big miracle that, how is it part of the miracle that he gave bottles of wine that were older than each person? And then another question, why is it emphasized that people got to drink the wine of their country? And how could Mordechai be happy about this party? That's what the Gemara says in its explanation of the verses. So now let's start putting questions to each other. Everyone got wine from his country, and wine that was older than he was. So how old was Mordechai? Mordechai was extremely old. Because it says in the Megillah, Ish Yehudi Ayah B'Shushan HaBira, there was a man from Yehuda in Shushan HaBira, Shmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish. His name was Mordechai, son of Yair, son of Shimi, son of Kish. Ish Yemini, Asher Haglam Yerushalayim, who had been exiled from Jerusalem, Im Hagola Asher Haglasa, with the dispersion that was exiled, Im Yechanya Melech Yehuda, with Yechanya, king of Judea. Now, Achash Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king, waged three wars against the Jews of Israel. In the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's rule, he waged a war against King Jehoiakim and defeated him. But Jehoiakim wasn't loyal to Nebuchadnezzar, so he came back 6 years later, in the year 8 of Nebuchadnezzar's rule, and he exiled the king, Jehoiachin, the son of Jehoiachin, as well as the Cheresh and the Mazger, all the brilliant young people, like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Mordechai, they were all exiled with Jehoiachin. 11 years later, Nebuchadnezzar comes back, and he destroys the Beit HaMikdash, and kills King Tzidkiyah, who was the last king. So, Mordechai had been exiled with Jehoiachin. He was exiled 11 years before the destruction of the first temple. Now, at the time of Achashverosh's party, it's 70 years from that date. That's what the Gemara says. It was 70 years from when Jehoiachin was exiled. Mordechai was already in Israel at that time when he was exiled. So, we're talking about wine. It has to be more than 70 years old. It's probably, I don't know, 85 years old wine, maybe 90 year old wine. But Mordechai was probably a 15 year old. He was probably a teenager when he was exiled. So we're talking about wine that's older than him. So let's say he was 14 when he was exiled. That was 70 years before. That's already 84 years. The wine has to be older. So about 85, 86 year old bottle of wine. But remember, everybody eats which wine? Wine from where? Their country. So it has to be Israeli wine from 84 years ago. So where's Achashverosh going to get an 85, 86 year old bottle of Israeli wine? He's living in Persia. His rules are that everybody gets the wine of their country, and everybody gets wine that's older than them. He has to find Israeli wine that is 90-year-old Israeli wine.
No, why did he have to get it? Mordechai wasn't at the party.
He was, the Gemara says. Gemara says, Lasos Kirtzon Ishvanish.
Didn't we know somebody stood outside and he told everybody how dare you don't?
That's not like this Gemara. This Gemara says that Mordechai was happy in the party. And that Mordechai was encouraging people. So it's part of the question. Right? What does it mean he's there at the party? We always know the word that he's keeping people away from the party. But this Gemara says, "Lasos kirtzon ish va'ish." Achashverosh decreed to do like the will of each person, like Haman, who's called Ish Tzar v'Oyev, and like Mordechai, who's Ish Yehudi. So, if Mordechai's at the party, he has to feed Mordechai wine from Israel, because ain't no nice. Everybody gets the wine of their country, and it has to be older than the person. It has to be wine that's older than Mordechai. So it's got to be really old. It's the wine of the Beis HaMikdash.
Oh.
Achashverosh was feeding Mordechai with the wine of the Beis HaMikdash. Because we know that in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a separate room called the Lishkas HaShmanim, the room of the oils. And in this room of the oils, any person who had a Karban Mincha that they wanted to bring, or if they were bringing an animal, an ola, and ola is supposed to be accompanied with wine, or shlamin is accompanied with wine, they would go, they would give money, and then they would get, you know, a token, and they would give the token to the kohen, and the lishkas hashmanim, and the kohen would give them the oil for the mincha, or the wine for the nesach. So there was wine in the Beis HaMikdash that had been prepared for the Beis HaMikdash. That was many, many seals, because we know that if a non-Jew handles wine, it becomes non-kosher. But if the bottle of wine has two seals on it, And even if the non-Jew handles it, it stays kosher. So there was wine of the Beis HaMikdash that was very, very old, of the Lishkas HaShmanim, the wine that had been prepared for the Mizbeach, the wine of the Masah. What else does it say in the Megillah? The Kelim Kelim Shamim. And there were all sorts of utensils, different types of utensils. So Rashi tells us, we have the custom to read that phrase with the tune of Eicha. The Kelim Kelim Shamim. Why do we read it with the tune of Eicha? The tune of Eicha is to remind us that these are the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash. Achashverosh took out utensils of the Beis HaMikdash. That's what we learned. The Gemara says that Achashverosh had a whole calculation. It's the 70th year. Because it's the 70th year, the Jews aren't going to do the deeds. So he took out the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash. So not only did he take out gold utensils, and pans, and the shovels of the Beis HaMikdash, he took out the wine of the Beis HaMikdash. And so when he's feeding everyone the wine of their country, which is older than them, he was feeding people with the wine of the Beis HaMikdash. So now we can understand why Mordechai was happy. Whole meal, Mordechai was standing outside. 186 days he was saying, don't go, don't go. But then they came with the wine of the Beis HaMikdash. So Mordechai was very happy. Now he gets a chance to drink the wine of the Beis HaMikdash.
How could he drink it? No Jewish waiters.
No, there were Jewish waiters. Mordechai, there were Jewish waiters. Yeah, for Mordechai, all the people got to drink the wine of their country. So Mordechai is very excited. He's going to get to drink the wine of the Beis HaMikdash.
Was that wine ever were you able to consume that wine at the time of the Beis HaMikdash? Or was it only for Kabbalah?
So the wine had not been consecrated yet. Because the wine gets consecrated once it's put into the vessel. Poured into the Kedushas. That's when it gets its Kedushas all broken. This is wine that was prepared to be used in the Beis HaMikdash.
But it benefited from it because it was holy.
Yeah, because it wasn't yet holy. But it was the wine that was prepared for the Beis HaMikdash. So the wine that was prepared for the Beis HaMikdash, can you imagine the holiness of the wine? You know, there's a whole thing. And Hasidim like to have shirayim, leftover food, tzadah. So I know of people that they have wine. They call Koshel Bracha of the Bells Already. Years ago, in the 1950s, they got some wine of the Bells Already. So they pour a drop into a bottle. And from that bottle, they pour another drop into another bottle. So it's still, you know, a little bit of the Bells Already. It's wine that's connected to the Bells Already. So can you imagine? Because they want to have a little connection to the devotion of the Bells Already. Can you imagine if you have a connection to Beis HaMikdash wine? Wine from the Lishkas HaShmanim, the wine that was prepared for the Beis HaMikdash. Mordechai was very excited. And what's this day? This is the seventh day, which is Shabbos. There's a chance to make Kiddush on Beis HaMikdash wine. Now, it's not just regular Beis HaMikdash. So it's amazing. It's holy wine of the Beis HaMikdash. It's wine of Eretz Yisrael. You should know that whenever you eat the fruits of Eretz Yisrael, it makes you a holier person. If you eat the dates of Israel, it makes you a holier person. The fruit of Eretz Yisrael makes you a holier person, because the verse says that Moshe Rabbeinu begged to enter into the land of Israel. So the Medrash says, V'chilecha mipir yahud tzarech, does he need to eat some of its fruit? So the Rishon Rebbe said, he's Moshe Rabbeinu. He doesn't need to eat its fruit, but all the rest of us do need to eat its fruit. So we eat the fruit of Eretz Yisrael, it makes us into holy people. Bach says, if you eat the fruit of Eretz Yisrael, you should say the special bracha, in Al HaMichya, of Le'achol Mipir Yach, that you're eating the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. So this is an unbelievable thing. The people of eating, of drinking the wine of Achashverosh, really drinking the wine that the Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the Lishkas HaShmanim of the Beis HaMikdash, that had enormous holiness. So now we can answer the first question. The first question was, Bayom HaShmini, on the seventh day, Tov lev hamelech b'yayin. The king's heart was happy with the wine. So we say, according to the deeper meaning, it's not the king Ahasuerosh, it's the king Hashem, who's happy with the wine of Kiddush. So we say, one second, why is he only happy with the wine of Kiddush now? Jews have been making Kiddush for 70 years in Persia. The answer is, for 70 years they were making Kiddush on Persian wine. But now they're making Kiddush on Eretz Yisrael wine. And it's not just regular Eretz Yisrael wine. It's wine that was prepared for the Beis HaMikdash. So that made Hashem very happy. Wow, it's such a beautiful thing. They're drinking the holy wine. And this is Ein Oneis, Ashtiyat Kadas. And the drinking was like the law. Ein Oneis, nothing was forced. Everybody got to drink the wine of their country. What's the big deal? You get to drink the wine of your country. This is the big deal. The Gemara tells us in the Sechet Shabbos that when Hashem wanted to give the Torah to the Jewish people, he held the mountain over us. He said, if you accept the Torah, good. Otherwise, I'm dropping the mountain. So we said, okay, we'll accept the Torah. So the Gemara says, that's not such a great commitment. You know, we were going to be killed. That's how we accept it. We're not really obligated. The Gemara says, don't worry. Can't put it in. You said we're doing it out of will. Can't move a kibble. We reestablished what we accepted then by force. Now we accepted it with love. In other words, when we drank the wine of Beis HaMikdash, we were so inspired, that gave us the strength to now accept Hashem with love. So that's the Ein Oneis that took away the coercion of the Beis HaMikdash. So now, took away the coercion of the first time we got the Torah at Sinai. So now we can understand why it was Lasos Kirtzon Ish Va'ish, that Ahasuerus' party was to fulfill the will of each person. The will of Mordechai and the will of Haman. Mordechai's happy that the Jews are drinking the wine of Beis HaMikdash. It's a very holy wine. And Haman is happy because he thinks, oh, the wine of Beis HaMikdash is going to be gone. The Jews are going to drink it. That means they're never going to come back to the Beis HaMikdash. But really, the Jews merited by drinking this wine to reach a very high level. Very high level of Kiddush. It says in Shir HaShirim, Hiviani on Beis Hayayim. King brought me into the house of the wine. So when the Jews got to drink the wine, we were brought into Hashem's house. This wine was the wine that had in it the holiness of the Beis HaMikdash. The Chubalim talk about a wine called Yayin HaMashumar, the preserved wine. Yayin HaMashumar equals a Nematria Esther. Through the experience of Purim, wherever a Jew is, he gets to drink the wine, has in it a little bit of the wine of Beis HaMikdash. Hashem is bringing us in. The whole miracle, according to this, happened because the Jews drank this holy wine. The Jews drank the holy wine, and through drinking the holy wine, that's when we accept the Torah with love. So we celebrate this holiday by drinking wine. Through the drinking of the wine again, we merit to reconnect with Hashem and to come close to Hashem. Today I was in the YU library, so I picked up this new book. It's a very nice initiative. It's an initiative in Israel to try to spread Hasidus. It's called Mayim Otecha. So they came out with this book only 2 years ago. They took the Lubavitcher Rebbe's Toros, which were in Yiddish, and they rewrote them into Hebrew, understandable Hebrew, and made them much more accessible. So we learned two ideas about wine. One idea is that we're so happy with the wine because we're happy that we overcame depression. So every moment of joy increases more joy. That was Rav Huttner's idea. We saw Rav Wolfson's idea that we're so happy with the wine because the whole miracle happened because we got to drink the wine of the Beis HaMikdash at Ahasuerus' party. So we're very happy on this day with wine. The Lubavitcher Rebbe has a whole essay here, a very interesting essay about anti-Semitism. So the Gemara, in its discussion of the whole story of Ahasuerus, Haman, Megillas Esther, the Gemara says if you look at that passage in the third chapter of the Megillah, it's very, very dispiriting. Right? Haman is rewarded by the king, right? And anyone who sees him has to bow to him. Whenever he walks by, everybody needs to bow to him. And he's very upset. He walks by Mordechai. Mordechai doesn't even move. So Haman gets all upset. Mordechai's not moving. And Haman's very angry. And Mordechai's not bowing to him. They tell him that the nation of Mordechai is the Jews. So he decides to wipe out all the Jews. So Haman goes to Achashverosh and he says, you know, there's this nation, they're scattered, they're divided, they don't listen to the rules of the king. If the king is so willing, it should be written to wipe them out. I'll give 10,000 loaves of silver to the king's treasury to wipe out all the Jews. So Achashverosh says, I don't need the money. You do to the people whatever you want. It's very dispiriting, you know. Someone wants to kill us. He thinks he has to spend a huge amount of money to pay off the government official to have permission to kill us. And the government official says, you know what? You don't even need to pay me. Go kill them. It's terrible. Very devastating. The Gemara says, you know what it's like? It's like two people. One guy has a field, and in the field he has all sorts of piles of dirt. And the other guy has a field with lots of holes in the field. So the guy with the piles of dirt says, you know, I'm looking to find someone with holes so I can get rid of my dirt. And the guy with the holes says, I'm looking for dirt so that I can fill in the holes so I can have a clean field. But that's Haman and Achashverosh. Haman says, I'm looking for someone to fill in my holes. And Achashverosh is saying, I'm looking for someone to get rid of my piles. Oh, you want to get rid of the Jews? I want to get rid of the Jews. Let's get rid of all of them. That's the story. So Lubavitcher Rebbe said, you know, if the Gemara gives us this parable, somebody has piles of dirt and someone else has holes. There's got to be some lesson in that. There's something about Haman of holes. He's empty. He's missing. There's holes in his field. And to fill them up, to fill up the holes, the Jews have to be wiped out. That seems strange. If you wipe out the Jews, you're not filling up a hole. You're getting rid of somebody. You fill up a hole by getting something. He has a hole. He needs something. What's he getting? He's getting the Jews wiped out? How does that help him? Then you have Achashverosh. Achashverosh is piles of dirt. He wants to get rid of the piles of dirt. Okay? So, you know, what's the lesson for us in the fact that these two Gentiles had such hatred for us? So, Lubavitcher Rebbe said that the Torah, number one, wants us to treat Gentiles very well. We're not allowed to steal from a Gentile. We're not allowed to cause a Gentile to do a sin. Gemara Nevot Hazara says that a Jew shouldn't sell certain animals to Gentiles, because the Gentiles have a Yetzirah for bestiality. So if you sell them the animal, it's lifnei ivur lo tite mishal, causing them to stumble. So don't sell them these animals. But you see that we care about their religious welfare. We don't want them to sin. We're not allowed to encourage them to sin. And even more than that, we have an obligation to share the Torah. The Torah that applies to them, we want them to have too. We want them to believe in God. We want them to not to worship idols. We want them to be moral. We want to sell our religion to them too. We want it for the Gentiles. We care about the Gentiles. Nevertheless, we know that we don't really trust the Gentiles much. Mara says in Baba Basra, when the Gentiles are looking to do a favor, the Jews shouldn't get involved. You know, if a government official offers to give money to the Jews should say, no thanks. Because the Yavesh Ktsira, you know, only when their merits are exhausted, then we'll get out of exile. So we don't want to further their merits and say, okay, give us money, you know, help out our poor. Then we'll be in exile longer. We don't want them. Chesed lubim chatos. Their kindness is not really sincere. It's only for themselves. So what is this wealth? What is this relationship between the Jews and the Gentiles? So says the Lubavitcher Rebbe like this. He said, the key is to realize that we're not supposed to rely on them and on their friendship, but we have to rely on Hashem. We have to have our trust in Hashem and rely on Hashem. I know that throughout history, b'chol dor v'dor, in every generation, ol d'maleinu l'chalosim, there's going to be a Gentile who's going to want to wipe us out. One time it'll be Nebuchadnezzar, one time it'll be Paro, one time it'll be Achashverosh. Doesn't matter the name, in every generation there's somebody who wants to wipe us out. And who saves us? Kadosh Baruch Hu matzil miyad. Hashem saves us from them. But how does Hashem save us? He wants us to realize that really he's the one saving. So the primary effort in trying to be saved from the dangers that we have with them has to be prayer. Prayer, tzedakah, learning Torah, that's the primary effort. And we have to realize that Hashem put us into the physical world. And He wants us to sanctify the physical world. So after we do the primary effort, which is prayer, then we have a secondary effort, which is to talk to them, to try to negotiate, to try to find friends, and to give money, and to bribe, and to lobby. But first, the first goal is prayer. The first goal is to rely on Hashem. Since Hashem doesn't want open miracles, we then have to go through the natural way. The natural way is also to try to do things. So now we can understand what's going on here in this parable. Ahasuerus has many countries, 127 countries. The Gemara says, for him, the Jews are like these piles of dirt in this country. If somebody has a field and he has piles of dirt, he wants to get rid of the piles of dirt. He wants to get rid of them. In other words, their presence upsets him. The presence of the Jews upsets Ahasuerus. Because Ahasuerus feels this world belongs to me. And the Jews are a nation of godliness, of serving God, of doing mitzvos. It upsets me. Their presence in my field, I'm the Baal HaSada. It's my field. What are they doing in my field? He's upset about the presence of the Jews. He wants to get rid of the Jews so that there won't be Jews in this world upsetting him. This world will be his world, the way of the Gentiles. What about Haman? Haman is upset about the holes in his field. What's that idea? That idea is that Haman feels holes in his life. He feels a lack of meaning in his life. Because the Jews remind me that my life is meaningless. Because the Jews, they have meaning in their life, they have Torah, they have mitzvahs, and I don't have meaning, so my life is an empty life. I have all these holes in my life, it's disappointing. Ahasuerus is upset that the Jews are in his field. This is, should be my realm. How are these Jews in this physical realm? And Haman is upset that the Jews have their religion, that they have meaning and purpose, and he doesn't like that, because he doesn't want their, because it makes him feel bad, he doesn't have meaning. So he has holes in his field. So he says, if I get rid of the Jews, then I won't have any problems of lack of meaning. That'll fill up my meaning. That'll fill up the holes in my field. Because if the Jews are God, there's no one to say, oh, we have a more meaningful way. We're serving God. No. Everybody's physical. Then I won't feel bad that I don't have the meaning. But Ahasuerus, she's not even looking for meaning. Ahasuerus is just upset that the Jews exist. So this one doesn't want any Jews to exist. And that one doesn't want any Jews to exist. And Mordechai realizes that when he gets the letters from Ahasuerus that all the Jews should be wiped out. Because Ahasuerus wants to wipe us out. Haman wants to wipe us out. So this is Jewish history. And in every generation, there's an enemy who wants to wipe out the Jews. So he says, well, if it's Jewish history, we need to go lobby. So he contacts Esther. And he tells Esther, go to the king and lobby on behalf of the Jews. So what does Esther say? Esther says, listen, I'm not asking for the best beautician or the best cosmetics to look as most beautiful as possible when I go to the king, who hasn't called me for 30 years. If I'm going to go to the king, the primary effort has to be spiritual. The primary effort has to be prayer. Go gather all the Jews and fast for the next 3 days and pray for me. And I and my women will also fast. And at the last minute, after all these spiritual efforts, we're not going to now say, oh, we did all the spiritual things, so now God will save us. Then after we do all the spiritual preparation, then we go physically to the king in order to lobby to pay him off, and to get him to change his decree. That's why the Gemara says, Shalcha lahem Esther lachachamim. Esther sent to the sages, Kva'uni l'dobus. Write me down for all generations. I want to be part of Tanakh. So they sent back, Kinach ma'orera salina levina umos. You're going to make all the nations jealous of us. They're going to be upset with us. She sent back, I am already written in the history books of Persia. So it's okay, they know the story. You can write it down. What's Esther saying? I'm already written, right? Before all generations. She's saying this keeps happening in every generation. In every generation, in every generation, there are those who want to wipe us out. And Hashem is the one who's going to save us from their hands. But the way in which Hashem is going to save us is first, primarily, we put in spiritual effort. We have to pray, and we have to fast, and give tzedakah, and daven, and take on, to do more mitzvahs. And then, in the spiritual effort, we also put in physical effort. Haman, he hates the Jews because of the soul of the Jews. Because the soul of the Jews is meaning, and he has no meaning. Ahasuerus hates the Jews because of the physical of the Jews. His physicality is mine. I don't want these people here. It should all be for me. I don't want them to take up the physical. So we defeat them with soul and physical. The soul through fasting and the physical through lobbying. But it's important to write it for all generations because it's going to keep happening in every generation. And in every generation we have to know this message. In every generation we have to know both points. Both to be engaged in the spiritual, as well as to be engaged in the physical, and in that way to overcome the anti-Semites that are always there in every generation. Lubavitch Rebbe said another thought, very nice thought. There's a medrash that says that Haman, what's he like? Haman is like a bird who makes a nest on the beach. Comes the wave and it pulls the nest into the ocean. So what does the bird do? It gets angry. Says, you know what? That horrible ocean, it took my nest into the ocean. I'm going to dry the whole ocean. So the bird goes down and takes some water, tries to bring the water of the ocean out to the beach. Goes back, tries to take some more water, puts it to the beach. And God says, you foolish, silly bird, you think you're going to be able to dry the ocean? It's impossible. So too, Hashem says to Haman, you foolish, silly bird, you think you're going to wipe out the Jewish people? Hashem says, I can't wipe out the Jewish people. I said after the sin of the golden calf, Herif mimeni v'ashmi dein, leave me alone, Moshe, I'm going to wipe out the Jews. And yet I couldn't wipe them out. I loved them too much. I forgave them. Do you think you're going to wipe out the Jews? So Lubavitch Rebbe asked, okay, if the message of the Medrash is that Haman wanted to wipe out the Jews, and God says you can't, why does it have to give this parable of a bird trying to dry out the ocean? The bird comes, it takes water, drops the water on the beach, trying to move all the water onto the beach, and it doesn't work. What does that have to do with Haman? So he suggested that it's based on the Gemara in Brachos, a very famous Gemara. The Gemara says that when the Romans made decrees against the public teaching of Torah, Rabbi Akiva was gathering groups and teaching them Torah. Mara says that there was this fellow, Papas, Akiva's nephew, said, I'm worried for you, it's illegal. So Akiva gave him the parable of a fish in the water, and there's a fisherman trying to catch the fish, and there's a fox walking by the water. So the fox sees that the fish is stressed and running away from the fisherman. The fox says to the fish, you foolish fish, come out of the water, be with me, you won't have a problem with the fisherman. So the fish says, no, if I leave the water, I'll certainly die. If I'm in the water, I'm in danger. Certainly out of the water, I'm not going to be able to live. So that's what Rabbi Akiva says. You know, the Torah is the water of life. If we have Torah, we're in danger. But certainly if we leave the Torah, then we'll certainly be wiped out. There's no way I can leave the teaching of Torah. I have to continue teaching Torah. So what do we see here? Water is a symbol of Torah. So Haman, he knew Jewish history. Right? He knew which month Mordechai, Moshe Rabbeinu died in. He knew Jewish history, so what's he thinking to wipe out the Jews? Throughout Jewish history, there are all sorts of tyrants who try to wipe out the Jews. Paro tries, Sanherib tries, and they all fail. So why did Haman think he was going to succeed? Oh, Haman was like the fox. He thought he would take the Jews out of the water. He thought he would take the fish out of the waters. What did he say? Look, there was this party of Achashverosh. And then the Jews enjoyed the party. They enjoyed walking away from the religion. So he was very happy. He thought, this is it. They're gone. How could the Jews be enjoying the party of a wicked man? Jews should be upset about the party of a wicked man. If they're enjoying the party of the wicked man, they're disconnecting from their Judaism. So they're gone. So if they're gone, I can go get them. Hashem says, you silly bird. It's like a bird trying to take the water out of the ocean. You think the water's going to be out of the ocean? The water's going to be back in the ocean. You can't take the water out of the ocean. You're not going to be able to dry the ocean. The Jewish people never really leave Hashem. Even the Jews that enjoy the party of the Rasha, they're also loyal to Hashem. They're also deep down really connected to Hashem. So whatever you're trying to do, it's not going to succeed. The Jews, no matter what, are going to be connected to Hashem. And that's why on Purim we say, we know that we're going to be connected to Hashem. Even if we're a lowly Jew, we're going to be attached to Hashem. Haman fails. On the contrary, all the Jews survive, succeed. Here we have a large crowd. Maybe, I'm sure downstairs they'd let them.